Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, is presented by Parasite Systems. I'm your host, Doug Simcox, and today I'm recording in the BTC bus in Tamworth, New Hampshire. Now, we are deep in the rodeo season. The cowboy Christmas is behind us, but we got cowboys, cowgirls. They're still out there. So many rodeos yet to get to. We've got the big rodeo coming up in St. Tite. That's going to be happening up in Quebec. We appreciate you for including us in your travels, all these long runs, overnight runs, and all kinds of weather and traffic. So imagine us sitting in your passenger seat, along for the ride. Imagine our guest, Marilee Steffen, sitting to your right, and our job, her job, is to keep you entertained and awake. So be safe. Eyes up if you're driving a big rig. Get plenty of braking distance and watch for those crazy cars that seem to want to pass you on the right side as you move over to give space on an on-ramp. And as Robbie Hodges says, you've got 65 feet of rolling death, so be careful out there. And we hope this episode will help the miles pass a bit easier. And as I said, today we've got a guest from Hyco, Texas. Please welcome to our show, Miss Marilee Steffen. Marilee, how are you today?
I am just fine, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Well, welcome, and thank you for being on our show. And we appreciate you being here with us today. So, Marilee, we like to start, by going as far back as we can in our memories. And so, Marilee, where did you grow up? And take us back as far as you can go.
I grew up in Wheeling, Illinois, which is a small town when I was growing up, and it's very large now. Always loved horses, always wanted a horse. And of course, my mother said, if you want a horse, you have to get a job and pay for it yourself, which I did, and purchased my first horse and just went on from there. I've always loved horses ever since I was a little kid.
And how old were you when you bought your first horse?
I was 20 years old.
Okay. So you'd been out and about, you'd gotten a job. What were you doing for a living at that point, Marilee?
I was a hairdresser.
Okay. And what attracted you to horses? Why horses?
Just a fantasy I always had. As a little kid, I always wanted a little pony that was a chocolate colored with a flaxen mane and tail. And that was my dream. So when I got a job and saved my money, I was going to California on a vacation and happened to drive by a stable, and there was my first horse, and there went my dream of going to California.
So
never got there yet.
Okay. So let me back up. Where was the stable? Where was it located?
It was just outside of Wheeling, out in the country.
Okay. So right close to the house. And what was the name of the horse you bought? And maybe describe your horse.
She was a little cow pony from Nebraska, and she was black and white paint, and I named her Misty.
Okay. And what, how old was Misty when you got her?
She was probably about 15.
Okay. And you had taken riding lessons before, or?
Yes.
You had. Okay.
At the place where I bought her, I had taken riding lessons and happened to see her, and I went, oh, she's so beautiful. Is she for sale? And of course, she was for sale. And there went my California money.
Okay.
I bought me Misty instead.
Bought you Misty instead. And do you remember what you paid for her?
$300.
Okay. And in those days, what year would this have been? What year would this have been?
Well, let's see, 69, probably, let's see, if I was 20, it was probably about 65.
1965. And $300 would have gotten you to California and back, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. It would have been a wonderful trip, and I always wanted to go. It was a go west, young man, is what they said.
Absolutely. So you get Misty, 15 years old, and you were riding her at the stable. What talk a little bit about what you used her for.
I went every day. I never missed a day because that was my dream. And the stable was just maybe 5 miles down the road, and I could go every day, morning, either in the morning or in the evening. And we just rode around the farm and out in the, it was farm country. I could ride her up and down the roads. And then I kind of got interested in showing her and halter because she was very well built. And she wasn't much of a pleasure to ride. She was pretty fast, being a little old cow pony. And that just kind of went on from there.
Okay. So halter classes. Did you ever game her? Barrels, poles, flags, or anything like that?
No. Just pleasure riding.
Just pleasure riding. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then how long did you have Misty, and how did, a little bit of progression there.
Well, I had her about 5 years, and she got ill, and I had to put her down. It was very sad. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, I had to have another one, mm-hmm. and bought another horse. And at that time, the stable put on a rodeo, and that's where I first saw Randy, my husband. 55 years at that rodeo, and it just progressed from there.
Okay, so this would be around 1970?
It was around 69.
1969. Mm-hmm. And what do you remember about that? Was that the first year for the rodeo that the stable had the rodeo?
Yes, it was. It was the first year, and it was pretty exciting, and I just thought that would be the way to go.
Okay, and what do you remember about that rodeo? What stands out for you, other than meeting Randy, of course?
Mm-hmm. I can remember the contract acts that they had was George Taylor, and I think Lisa Harris might have been in that, and they did a little comedy skit during the rodeo called Big Balls in Cowtown, and it always stuck in my mind, and they were out there in their clown suits and their fake guitar singing in a fake microphone, and it was pretty exciting. I liked that. It impressed me.
That impressed you. And so the contract acts caught your eye.
Yes.
And before we go there, let's back up a little bit. You met Randy. Describe Randy, what Randy was doing at the time when you met him in 1969 at this rodeo.
I think it was more like 68. But anyways, okay. He was sitting in the stands because he had a broken leg.
Okay.
And as you went by, you had to kind of step around him. And so that was my first glimpse of Randy Steffen.
You stepped around him because he had his broken leg propped up or whatever.
Right. He was sticking out, sitting in the bottom bleacher there with his legs sticking out. And everybody that went up and down the in front of the bleachers had to step around him.
And if I remember right, Randy told a story, broke his leg. Was this the time he broke his leg in like six places?
No, that was at Detroit, Michigan.
Okay.
Rodeo.
Okay. But he had a broken leg, so he was on crutches, I take it.
Right.
And how had he injured himself at this point?
He was working for the city of Lake Forest, trimming trees, and they trimmed a tree and it fell and caught him from behind and broke his leg.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you and did you say, hey, can you move? It's hard to get around you.
Right. Excuse me.
Yeah. Did you introduce yourself at that point or did he introduce himself?
No, I just kind of walked right on by.
Okay.
And that was my first glimpse of Randy.
Okay.
And then we used to, of course, they had cutting horses practice once a week at a stable further down the road at Farmington Stables. And two of my girlfriends and I, we would go and watch. And there was Randy riding his big buckskin horse. And he had gotten to the practice that night and somehow forgotten his saddle, and he asked if he could borrow mine, and I had been formally induced to him, and I said, I don't know if I want to let you have my saddle. He says, I'll give it right back, you know, so that was funny.
Yeah, you were worried he might take off with it.
Right, and because I had worked hard to buy that saddle so I could ride my horse,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And at this point, he was riding buck. He talked a little bit about the big buckskin, and he was doing some cutting competition at that point. So Farmington wasn't so far away from Wheeling.
No,
And then
it was
how?
kind of like a couple towns over.
Okay. And how far was your town from where Randy was living at the time?
Oh, Wheeling to Lake Forest was probably a maybe a 30-minute drive,
Oh, okay.
depending. Yeah, it's
Okay.
all back then. It used to be country, which it is no more.
Yeah. Okay. So after you saw him and you lent him his saddle, you lent him your saddle. Did he give his saddle? Did he give your saddle right back to you?
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay. So all was safe and all was good. And then, yeah, step us through a little bit further.
Well, my girlfriends and I, we all had horses and we'd go to horse shows. And Randy was working for a man and showing his horses. And that's kind of, you'd see him at the different horse shows. And we kind of struck up a friendly conversation at that point. And he asked me out on a date. And I went, oh, okay. You like horses? I guess you're all right.
Yeah. That would be the first check, wouldn't it? First test.
Right,
You bet.
definitely.
And did his horse like him is another check, I think.
Yeah, right. His buckskin horse was pretty awesome. Anybody that ever knew him or saw him ridden, he was very impressed. He was an awesome horse.
Okay. So you go on your first date and it takes off from there.
Right. And then we got married 6 months later.
Okay. Yeah. And he was already involved in rodeo. You weren't involved in rodeo at this point.
No, at that point, no. All
Okay.
I wanted to do is show my horse,
Yeah.
ride my horse every day. And I mean, I went every day, rain or snow or hot, because the stable was only a little, not too far away. And I'd go in every night. Ride my horse after work.
Now this was on the second horse. And the first horse you were doing halter classes. How were you showing this second horse? And what's the name of your second horse?
I had bought a little Palomino mare. She was a Poco bred horse, and I was going to pleasure ride her in bareback classes. And Randy had had a friend that was into Appaloosa horses, raised and trained Appaloosa horses, and he asked, he says, well, you ride your little Palomino mare bareback. Well, why don't you ride this? At that time, he was showing a stud horse called Honey Toe that won everything in Northern Illinois and all over. It was a huge success, and I would ride him in the bareback classes for him.
Oh wow. Okay. So Randy was showing for an owner
Yes,
and all kinds of classes, and then you had an opportunity to ride his horse in the bareback classes. And
Right.
what do you remember about that stud horse?
How automatic he was. I mean, he was such a gentleman. You could walk, when the announcer would say, walk your horses or trot your horses, or he'd say, lope, and he'd just pop off automatically. It was really automatic horse, and he was so handsome. Everybody, he did a lot of winning.
And how far afield were you guys going at this point? How far were you traveling for the horse show circuit?
Oh, probably all of Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin.
Okay. And something going on all the time?
Pardon?
Some show somewhere all through the summer?
Right, huh? And of course, when the fall came and the snow came, that ended up the show season outdoors in the area that I lived.
And what came next then?
Well, after we got married, I still continued to work, and Randy was showing horses and entering rodeos on the weekends. And some of them I could go to, and some of them I couldn't because of having to work. And it just evolved from there. And when he got a job picking up, he did. I would go with him and help him saddle his pickup horses and cool them out when he'd come out of the arena and they'd be hot and blowing, and I'd take them for a walk, cool them down. And he says, well, you ought to do something out here. And I said, well, what? And he says, well, he looked around, and a friend of his in Texas had a trained Brahma bull for sale that he had used for acts. So we went down to Texas on a very hot day. I could still remember how hot it was. Oof. And the man put the bull through the paces, and we liked him, and we bought him and took him home. And then that's when, at that time, Thurl Vadding hired us. Randy was working for him, and the bull's name was Jambalaya, and he did amazing. You could ride him. He would figure eight. He would take a bow. He'd lie down. He also would kneel down and crawl on his knees, and then he put his head on the ground, and then you could set it between his horns. He had huge horns on him. So we used him all that year. And he jumped through the fire.
Wow.
He was good.
Yeah. And easy to handle and everything on the ground okay?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You could ride him with a bridle. And, he was very gentle he was older.
Yeah.
He was an old bull, and he'd done it a lot. The man in Texas had showed him a lot.
Okay.
So he was pretty foolproof.
So he understood the crowds and the travel and
standing
by the trailer and all kinds of things.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And how long was this act? And did you have music behind it?
Oh, sure. You know, you have to choreograph everything. You know, you had certain music and, you know, you had a script that you gave the announcer. And, you know, with each trick that you did, he would elaborate on it. And he was good at that. We just used him. Then I became pregnant with my son Wade, and we were working indoor rodeos for Steve Gander. And the last rodeo that I couldn't work, Randy had to take and show him in Cedar Rapids at the Four Seasons Event Center there. And it was the only time he ever did a contract act. He said, that was it. He was finished with it. So that was the last time we used Jambalaya.
Oh, wow.
And then we had to go on, figure out something different for the next year, which you always try to do.
Mm-hmm. And what was the act that followed Jambalaya?
We had purchased a little white paint mare that was pure white. She had one brown ear. And we trained her to do the things that Jambalaya did, jump the fire and, you know, the riding and the bowing. And she would give you big kisses. She'd swing her head around and give you a big hug. And of course, she jumped through the fire. So we used that act. Of course, you're always thinking, well, what next? Mm-hmm. And during that time, I had been raising border collies. And Randy said, well, why don't you use that? So we worked up an act where we used the two border collies and a small herd of sheep, and we put them through obstacles and gates and things like that. And then he said, well, let's spice it up and add a couple of little monkeys. So we did. We got some little monkeys, and I did that act for probably about 20 years.
Oh, my.
I think I went through eight different sets of dogs, because after a couple of years, the dogs kind of, you know, they get, it's just a tough thing to carry a little 10-pound monkey on your back and run like crazy. You know, the crowds loved it.
Yeah.
We called it Cisco and Pancho, the world's smallest cowboys.
And 10-pound monkeys, these, what kind of monkeys were they?
They're capuchins.
Mm-hmm. And any, I mean, difficult to handle or train the monkeys?
These were, I could handle them. Anybody else, it would be, you know, a different story. The male, Cisco, was better than the female, Pancho. She was a little funny. I'd would get ready to run her in the act when they would call you, and I'd put a little towel over her head because she was a little crowd shy, you know, but she didn't like all the things going on in the background, and that kept her quiet, and she'd hold my hand, you know. She was really, was sad. I had them both a long time. Cisco was 48 when he passed away, and Pancho was 32 when she died. So, you know, they become like family.
Yeah. And easy to travel with and everything?
The first thing you concern when you travel is always, are the animals comfortable? Mm-hmm. And many times they rode in the back seat of the truck in crates. Okay. So if it was hot out or cold out, they're New World monkeys and they don't take the cold very, very good. So I was always concerned that they would be warm.
Yeah, and connected to you as you traveled. I'm sure they appreciated that too. And
oh, yeah.
The two monkeys, did you just have the two that you worked over the 20-year period?
Those two I did.
Yes.
I had several other younger ones, but I never advanced them to that point.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how you train a monkey. Number one, you put clothes on them. You dress them up a bit. Mm-hmm. And number two, you put them on the back of a horse.
So, on the back of the dog.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The on the back of the dog. Yeah. So talk a little bit about that. How do you train them?
Well, Randy had built little saddles that would fit on the dogs. And he worked, it was quite the deal. He worked them and reworked it and reworked until he got it just right. And then he had a little roll bar on the front of it so that if occasionally a dog would fall or slip so that the monkey wouldn't get squished. Mm-hmm. And they had a collar on the monkey, and then I would snap it to the roll bar to make sure that they didn't get scared and run off.
Yeah.
And they were really good. They were really good. They know how to sit up there, and they know they'd hang onto that roll bar and just like a steering wheel, it was because the dogs were running fast and turning and doing a lot of things like that.
Very neat. And you were showing the dogs at the same time in competitions, herding competitions?
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. I went to a couple of years. I made it to the finals. And 1 year we went to Fort Stockton, Texas, which was a long ride from Illinois. It was 1,420 miles. So it was huge. I didn't think we'd ever get there. And then I've been to the finals in Colorado, Meeker. And these are dogs from all over the country, would come. Mm-hmm. And I had a pair of young dogs who were really, really good.
And you trained them, Mary Lee, from the beginning to the end?
Yes.
And so what are some of the commands? Maybe before we do that, let's back up. What would a competition look like? Meaning, how's it set up, and what would they expect you to do with the dogs?
Okay, the first thing, you would need a large open field. Mm-hmm. And they would have different distances. The furthest one would probably be 450 yards, which is almost a half a mile, really. And then you would have two sets of gates, one on the right side and one on the left. And then you would have a pen at the end, and you would stand at a post in the middle of at the beginning of the field, and you would send your dog either right or left, and he would pick up the sheep, which were set out by people, usually riders that would hold the sheep that far away. And you would whistle the dogs to bring them, the sheep, to you, around you, and you would go to your right hand through your right hand gates, and then across the field, and then go through your left hand gates. And then you would bring them up to you, to the pen. And then after you penned them, certain sheep would have like a rubber collar around their neck. And then you had to bring the sheep out and separate the ones that had the rubber collar from the ones that didn't. And then that was the end of it. And then you had usually about 15 minutes. And the judge would be judging you on every obstacle. You'd get so many points. And that's how you were judged.
Wow.
In the highest. It was very competitive, very, very competitive from people all over the United States. And there were several gentlemen from across the pond, as they called it. And yeah. And the dogs, it was a lot of fun. It was a game. It was a chess game out there. And straight lines, it's like barrel racing. Straight lines get you through the things, and every deviation from the straight line, you would be deduction of points. So if you did everything right, you got the highest score.
Wow. Okay. So straight lines to get maximum points.
Right.
And you, kind of like horse cutting, you had to split the flock. You said some had collars, so you would push those off, and they had to hold them off and keep them separate, which for sheep has to be quite a challenge. I mean, they always want to get back with the rest.
Oh, yeah, they were flock bound, and a lot of times by that time your dog has really, worked a long distance and worked hard, and some of them were pretty tired. A lot of times you never got what they call the shed, where you would shed the collared sheep off, and but you just kept trying, and it was a lot of fun. Very competitive, very competitive. And a lot of camaraderie between the handlers. Everybody knew everybody and knew their dogs, and it's very interesting.
And the breeding of the dogs, you were working with border collies?
Yes, only border collies.
Only border
And
collies.
I'm sure people will disagree with you, but to be competitive in that scene that I just described to you, it border collies are really the only dogs that are capable of doing that.
Okay.
They've been bred for centuries over in England and Scotland and Wales, and they're just it's hereditary.
Okay. And you were raising pups and you were bringing them up and campaigning them. Were you training them all the way through?
Yes, huh?
Okay. So, my goodness, I mean, sending them as far as 450 yards away and them understanding whistles and movements and commands, natural instincts. I know a lot of breeding, you talked about that, but how do you do something like that? That just seems immense, the training.
Repetition.
Repetition.
Repetition. You take them out every day. You start out small in a small area, and your dog, he's either got to go right or left in a circle around him,
Okay.
or right through the middle of them, which you don't want. And their instinct is to bring them to you.
Okay.
That is their they've been instinctively bred to gather up something, whatever it might be, and bring it back to you, the handler.
And the disposition of a good working dog.
Well, it most border collies have awfully good dispositions. They're friendly. They want to please.
Okay.
So you're working on that. Their natural instinct, and they want to please you.
And for them, it's a game. For them, it's fun. Fun work.
Well, I would think it's work for them. It's so instinctively bred to run out there, gather up whatever you're putting them on, and bringing them to you, that that's their reward. They just love to work.
And I've watched some of the herding competitions and move when they need to and be very quiet when they're not needed.
Right. There's just a handful of commands that you put on a border collie, and when you say lie down and stay, they should do that until you give them the next command.
Okay. And you were competing with these, I mean, how many shows a year might you do to get qualified and get to the nationals?
Well, back then there were not as many competitions as there are now, but you would go all summer long and hopefully every weekend. In the Northwest is where Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois had enough shows that you could accumulate points to go to the nationals.
Okay. And always sheep.
Always sheep, right?
Okay. And I've seen some competitions where they might have geese or ducks, I guess. I've seen that. But
Yeah, they can have that, but I never liked to do that much because it taught a dog to come in so close.
Oh, it did.
Too tight, too tight.
Oh,
If
okay.
you're working a herd of geese, a dog has got to work tight. Where when you work a herd of sheep, you want them off, as far as possible.
Okay. So at this point, you're showing dogs. You've got your act going with your two monkeys, Poncho, Cisco and Poncho. And so you're doing rodeo, you're doing acts, you're raising a small child, Wade, at this point.
Yes.
And how many, you're somewhere every weekend. Either a competition or a rodeo or something's going on, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay.
Kept you busy.
Kept you busy. And any other acts or what came along with or after Cisco and Poncho, the monkeys and the dogs?
Okay. They endured a long time because the crowds really liked them. So the contractors that I worked for, Thurl, he always said, and always bring the dogs and monkeys because the crowds, it was a good crowd pleaser. Mm-hmm. And then I would have another act. I've had different horses. I had a big saddlebred paint horse that did dance tricks. You would ride him and he did different maneuvers. Mm-hmm. And then I had several horses, or a horse, a big paint that I worked at on the ground. And he did different tricks. And then I had one real pretty black and white horse that I drove, and he did tricks with driving. So you always working. And then back when we had Candy Kisses, the white horse, after a while, Randy said, well, why don't you try roaming riding? And I went, oh, Randy, I've never did roaming riding. So it was winter time, and we had a lot of snow in Illinois. So I would take saddle up Candy, and we had another white horse that Randy picked up on and tied them together, went out in my pasture and got up on the saddles and learned how to roam and ride in the snow. That way, if I fell off, I'd fall in the snow and not in the hard ground. It was so that's how I spent my winter. And then that year I started roam and riding, as another contract act.
Holy cow. So let me go back and make sure I got this. Candy Kisses, you were doing, you were using her for something else. And then you said, Randy suggested you do Roman riding.
Right.
And you go, well, here's another horse. We've been using him as a pickup horse, so that ought to work. And so you didn't have, at the time, you didn't have a trained set of Roman riding horses that had worked together and been trained together.
Correct. I had to make my own.
And you got to learn how to stand up. And what were the challenges of that? I mean, a lot of athleticism here, the Roman riding.
Right. And the saddles, of course, are not the Roman riding pads, mm-hmm. which Randy went on and had made for me. But in the meantime, I just had the regular pickup saddles and standing up on top of them. And it's winter time, so you're bundled up in snowsuits and boots and out in the snow, and the wind's blowing, and nothing is colder than Northern Illinois wind blowing in your face. Right. But that's how I learned to roam and ride out in the pasture in the snow.
And the saddles could be a little bit slick in the winter, I would think, the leather. Yeah.
Absolutely right.
And they're not flat. They're not completely flat. No. So
nope. Kind of concave, so it was a trick.
and you were able to keep the horses together enough front and center, front and back, so they didn't pivot right. out or anything like that.
Right. Oh, they were, of course, goodness. We stabled them together, they were used to one another, but that was pretty good. They it worked out good. They were about the same height, same size. They were pretty blocky, so it wasn't like there was one tall one and one short one.
Right. But they hadn't been taught to work together. I mean, you hadn't driven them together or anything as a team.
No. 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 No.
And what is just amazing is you've got to train horses to roam and ride, and you've got to learn yourself how to roam and ride
right.
from the balance standpoint and everything, and doing it in the Illinois winter.
Right.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun.
It sure sounds like it. But it was something, it had to be something you enjoyed.
Right. And you had to do it. You know, if you were going to perform, it had to be done right, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just had all winter to practice out there, be ready for the first show season, you know, to get started again.
You bet. You bet. So you were always working on acts.
Right.
Always had your mind open for something that might come along that you might be able to perform in the rodeo arena.
Right.
And did you have any acts that you tried that just didn't go?
No, because whatever Randy purchased the horses for that particular act, we just worked with it until they did it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know, he knew what he was looking for in a horse that would be, you know, would become an act.
Yeah.
You know, he just didn't pick any horse. You know, he knew what he was looking for and what the horse would be required to do. And it just, you know, you just don't pick any random horse out of the field.
Yeah.
First of all, you want something with color. That's because that's what everything is about, showmanship out there, color wise. And of course, then your costumes have to complement that. I made all my own costumes. So, you know, for each act, you had to have a different color, different scheme, different costume.
Yeah. And you made those yourselves. My goodness.
Yes.
And then you generate a script, something the announcer could follow along with and work with. Music. So when you get
right,
to a show, there's more than just rolling in saying it's time for my act. There's preparation. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what that preparation was on a
well,
given.
Well, you had to get with the announcer, mm-hmm, and go over the script and describe everything, you know, because after all, we all know the announcers are our lifeblood out there. They can make or break you out there in an act. Mm-hmm. And so that you get with the announcer and then you have your music, your cassettes, and then you go over the music with the person that's playing it. So you want something played at each particular trick or whatever you're doing, and that's pretty, you know. And then of course you had to line up people that would help with the props, because you know I had a pedestal for the at that time, the different horses would get on and do the end of the trail or get on and rear up on, and so you had to line up people that would be there for you when they say you're on, you know, you got to have your props out there ready. And then they had the same person would have to collect them and bring them out so they could go on with the next event. It's a lot of precision, and sometimes it worked out good, sometimes not so good.
Yeah. And how many minutes did you try to work your act to?
Well, you probably want to go maybe 2 to 3 minutes, because you don't want to drag it out. Mm-hmm. You know, people get tired of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you quick, fast, flashy, take your bow and you're out. The dogs and monkeys was always, people always enjoyed it. It didn't matter if that ran a little bit longer. They didn't care, because they just loved to watch those monkeys and dogs go. And that, but you know, you didn't want to drag it out.
Yeah. And regardless of the rodeo conditions, I mean, so talk a little bit about some of those different conditions.
Well, I always remember one fair that I worked, it poured. I mean, absolutely, it was pouring. And in all the years that I had done my sheepdog and monkey act, I never had to run my monkeys and dog. I could work the dogs in the mud, because that was one thing, but I was real particular about getting my monkeys wet, because I didn't want them to catch cold. And I can still remember this one contractor. There were like 10 people in the crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just pouring down rain. And I said, well, I'll go ahead, but I don't want to run my monkeys out there. He says, oh, no, you got to run the monkeys. And I was, I was a little upset with that. But anyways, yeah, I did it, but I wasn't very happy about it.
Yeah.
Monkeys, for 10 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the monkeys were okay? They didn't catch cold or anything?
Yeah, they were all right. I made it short and quick and dried them off real quick and make sure that they didn't get chilled.
You bet. You bet. You didn't have like little slickers or anything they could wear?
Yeah, I wish I had. They had their costumes on, which prevented, helped some with some protection, but definitely not a slicker.
And at any point in time, how many animals are you hauling in a rodeo season to the same show?
Well, okay, I'd always did the dogs and monkeys because the contractors always wanted that crowd pleaser.
You bet.
And then a horse act.
Okay.
Whatever that would be.
Okay.
Whatever horse I was hauling at the time. And then we always had Randy's pickup horses. We had he always had two or three with him at least.
Yeah.
And then you had to make room for the sheep because I carried my own sheep with me. So we had a long trailer. And Randy made a little pen for the sheep and then for the horses. And then, of course, the monkeys always rode in the truck with us.
Mm-hmm. And at the rodeo grounds, when you're set up, you had living quarters in the trailer.
Right.
And even this would have been back in the 70s, Marilee?
Yes, huh?
And
yes,
living quarters weren't that common, were they?
No, we bought it from a place in the middle of, I think, around Springfield anyway, Circle Inn. And it was, I think it was 32 foot long. It had living quarters in the front. It had a stove, refrigerator, table, and a shower and a bathroom, which was nice. Mm-hmm. And then all the accommodations for the animals in the back.
Mm-hmm. And you would go into a rodeo Friday, Saturday, Sunday performances. You'd get there Friday afternoon. You'd get there Thursday night. What would you typically do?
If it was far enough, try to get there. We always try to travel in the evening and during the cool of the night for the animals, for the horses and the dogs and the sheep and the monkeys and for us. So we would always arrive in the morning and then set up and get everything together.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you're hauling a lot of animals. What was the care of the animals like? You talk about monkeys possibly getting colds and that sort of thing. A lot of vet care?
Well, the monkeys were primary. I wanted to make sure they were healthy because they were hard to train. You just wanted to make sure they were safe and happy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then the dogs. Always had at least two dogs with me, sometimes three. And, you had to make sure that they were taken care of, that they had shade, mm-hmm. especially when you pull into rodeo grounds and they're hot, because they were doing the hard part.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it was always the horses. You always had to feed and water them and just a lot of taking care of them. And then taking care of our, making sure that Randy was, you had to have all the clothing, mm-hmm. The costumes.
Mm-hmm. And then Wade would have been how old at this point, your son?
Well, the first time we took him was like about 2 months old. And he, so it was always taking care of him too, And then with Randy picking up and mine doing the X, there was always somebody around that would, I said, here, he would be in a buggy.
Yeah.
And then be in a stroller.
Yeah.
And, somebody would always just take him during that time. And then as he got a little bit older, we kind of made him, he would help with the props.
You bet. I was going to say, how old was he before he started to have responsibilities at the rodeo?
Oh, he was pretty young.
Yeah.
And as he got older, he Roman rode.
Oh, he
did? I still had my team.
Okay.
He only did it for one year and he thought, you know what, this isn't for me.
No, didn't like
rather,
it.
He'd rather bulldog.
No doubt. Now, the team that you used all the way through that particular act, the Roman riding team, was the team Candy Kisses and the Pickup Horse and the other one.
Right.
Okay.
Bandit.
Okay, so you're hauling two horses there. If you're hauling a team, you had a lot of stuff going down the road at any given time.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the further you went, you know, we always traveled at night so that it would be cooler for the horses. But if you were traveling during the day, I can remember one trip we went out east. It took us 36 hours of driving. It was unreal.
Holy cow. How far?
Yeah, so you know, you gotta stop and you gotta, you know, water them and feed them and exercise them.
Okay, was that the Madison Square Garden? 36 hours.
Yeah, we went through Buffalo. I remember that. I'll never go through Buffalo, New York again. It was like forever. Are we ever going to get here? And we did the Madison Square Gardens, and then we went on to Niagara Falls, and there was one in Pennsylvania way out. Oh my God, it just,
you had quite a run.
Yeah.
And your acts in all these venues, all these different places, what was it like to go into Madison Square Garden at that time?
It was pretty exciting, and of course everybody sees pictures of it, but in the gardens where the arena was, it was on the fifth floor, and because of the way they built it, it was like in a circle. You went like a spiral going up to the fifth floor. And it really drove our big 32-foot trailer. And on the fifth floor, the accommodations for the horses and trailers, they were like 20 foot apart, the big stone pillars. It was amazing that he could maneuver that, that wow, truck and trailer around. But then the sheep started out at the bottom, and we were herding them up, and there were these doorways on every floor, and the sheep would run in there. People would have to chase them out, and we continue on the spiral up until we got to the top of the fifth floor where the rodeo was.
Okay. So
there was a lot of,
for each show, you had to bring them up.
No. Once we got up there, we were able to keep them.
Oh, you were
in the arena.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And how many days or how many shows did you do in the Madison Square Garden at that time?
I believe we did three.
Okay.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay. Wow, that is very impressive.
And it was the first rodeo that they had in Madison Square Garden since back in the, might have been in the, I don't know if it was the 30s or the 40s, back in the Turtle.
Oh, really?
They hadn't had one in a long time.
Okay. Okay.
Steve had got it put together. He worked really hard. He was a tremendous promoter.
Yeah, and that was World's Toughest Rodeo then.
Right.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. And when you talk about going to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and some of these other places, those were all World's Toughest at that time also.
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Niagara Falls and... And there was one in Pennsylvania. I can't think of the name. It started with a D then. Hmm. Can't remember the name, but anyways.
Okay. And World's Toughest and Ladding, you've mentioned them. What other rodeo companies were you working for at that time, Marilee?
Well, I worked for Delane Long for him and did a couple for Preston Folks. Mm-hmm. Trying to think. Jim Sears.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. He was out in Iowa, I believe.
Right. And Joe Simon.
Oh, yeah. Out of Minnesota, right?
Right.
And
Joe
Simon.
And okay. Most of the time I worked, Theroux would book me for the whole year. So it was only the dates that you had available if somebody would call up and say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't make that one. But, you know, you just, most of them I worked for Theroux and Steve. And then the other ones, you know, when I had the openings.
You bet.
Jim Sutton, I worked a couple of rodeos for him, and Moss Bruckers.
Okay. And so Ladding would sign you for the whole year. How many performances or how many weekends would that be?
would be just about every weekend, you
Really?
know, it depended on. One time I went out for Mossbrookers, I went out to South Dakota for 30 days by myself. I drove
Oh.
the big truck and trailer and dogs and monkeys and horses, and I was gone for 30 days.
For 30 days. Oh my
Yeah.
goodness. And
It
you
was a
had
lot.
it was a lot. And what time of the year was that?
Was in the middle of July.
July. Okay. And you went up
Mandan.
Mandan. Okay. So you went out South Dakota with Moss Brookers. Okay. And good golly, driving. And what do you, I mean, this is a big rig, 32-foot trailer plus a big old truck pulling it. Okay.
Think I go forward real good. I'm not
Yeah.
so good on the backing up on it, you know.
That's a
I
long rig.
managed right. And during the week when I got out there, there was a photographer, Harold Bugle was his name, and he took a lot of pictures out there. And he says, "Well, you're gonna just stay out here." He says, "Come stay with me in Buffalo." And we'd go and spend the week during the week
In
at
Buffalo,
his
South
place.
Dakota.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had kind of
And
a
his
home base. You weren't living at
right
rodeo
home base. It was
grounds or whatever.
right. They were nice. He had a boy that the young boy, the calf rope, and he had a young girl, most athletic girl I ever saw. And she said, "Oh," she said, "I'd love to Roman ride." And I said, "Well, I have my Roman riding pads with me because I always carried them in tack compartment." I said, "I'll show you how if you want to get started." And she got her brother's rope horse, and she had another horse, and we slapped them pads on, and she was a natural at it, you know. And
Really? Okay.
yeah.
And did she go on with it?
Yes, she did. She, I think, until she got married, you know, she was young then, you know, just, you know, might have been before high school. She was quite the girl.
Oh
She
my
could really.
goodness. Okay. And then other, I mean, that's a long way. That's a long ways. And I know you went to Texas with World's Toughest and that sort of thing. And then, so building rodeos, of course, Madison Square Garden and all these places. Any finals or any big winter events you would go to?
Randy worked finals how many? Seven times,
Yeah.
and of course I always went with and took Wade. And one year I worked the contract X
Oh, you
at the
did.
finals.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And
And
which acts did you work?
I took the sheepdog and monkey.
Nice. Nice. Okay.
They wanted that, and I think Lenore Rowe did the dress act, and so, and of course I can still remember, you know, I don't know, the finals is it's so many different contractors and stuff like that. I says, "Well, you know, guys, I got to have my monkeys in the dressing room here." "Oh," they thought that was terrible. I said, "Well, I got to have them, you know. I mean, how can I can't run out to the trailer and dress them and bring them in?" So we did that. I only did that one year. That was it. Was there's too much going on there, you know, too many different heads.
Okay. Hard with the monkeys and everything. Yeah. And that's January. So that's, I mean, you got all kinds of weather that you were dealing with and everything. Okay.
I can remember we worked Omaha, Nebraska 1 year, and it was beautiful, 70 degrees. And on Sunday, and we left to come home, we hit a snowstorm going across Iowa, and it was so bad that we couldn't, you just couldn't see. We had to pull off and pull into a gas station and a motel. We got the last room, and the other pickup man, Mickey and his wife, and I said, "Well, come, you know, we got one room. It's got twin beds. You're more than welcome." I said, "But my monkeys have got to come in too, you know." So they went in the bathroom in their crates in the bathroom. You know, they got to stay warm. And I mean, it was a bad storm. You couldn't see your nose in front of your face. It was terrible.
Oh my goodness. And you're traveling with horses on board at that point?
Right, you just left them on the trailer, and the dogs were in their crates. Just left them in the crates because, you know, I said, "But the monkeys have got to be warm. They can't be out there in that cold."
You bet. Got to take care of them. Absolutely. Oh my goodness. And to have to hole up like that, horses on
Yeah.
board and everything, Man, it gets
And there was
difficult, doesn't it?
right and Wade and the three of us, and then Mickey and his wife, in this one little, room. It was just, it was a tiny little room. But anyways, at least we were out of the weather.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And just there for a day and was able to get rolling again.
Right, next morning, and of course, I got there. They had the roads clear, and off we went again.
Okay.
All you want to do is get home.
Wow. Any other traveling stories that you can think of that experiences,
Yeah.
wild times?
At one time in Milwaukee, we were working rodeo for Steve, and he had a group, two girls called the Sweethearts of the Rodeo. I don't know if you remember them, but anyways, they were on their, the one girl, Janice, was married to Vince Gill, and he was their manager, and she went out in part of the, sometime during the rodeo, and was singing, and but they couldn't ride, and the horse was wandering all over, and I ran out there and grabbed a hold of the horse to keep her from falling off, and she finished her song, and brought her in, and then afterwards Vince Gill came up and he said, "Oh, thank you for saving her. She doesn't know how to ride." I go, "Why did they put her on a horse?"
So the Sweethearts of the Rodeo, the singers, of course.
Yes,
Oh my goodness. Okay.
yeah.
Very nice. That's a cool story. And you got to meet Vince Gill. Was he famous at that
Yes.
point?
Well, he was just starting his career. He was their manager. He was managing them at that point.
That is very neat.
He was awful young looking then too. Still handsome.
Wow. Okay. Any other celebrities you rubbed elbows with?
Okay. All right, he went. Wanted to me, remind me that when he was saddle bronc riding, and of course he was the pickup man, but he would stop and get ready and get on his horse, and then I would go out there on that big buckskin horse and pick him up, fill in because I didn't have time to get another pickup man, so I was a pickup girl.
And how was that? That's history making. Was there anybody else, any
Well,
other women picking up at that point?
no, there weren't, and that was my one event. I said, "I'll pick up you and somebody else. You'll have to." I had to pick up Tom Orr one time too,
Okay.
because he was right after.
Wow, that is so neat. And when I just come full circle on this, you don't get a horse till you're 20. You're taking riding lessons, right? And but
Right.
every I mean you're self-taught, just a natural at all this stuff, and it all culminates with you getting on a pickup horse at a rodeo and picking up a saddle bronc rider.
Right.
Wow.
Picking up my husband.
Picking up your husband and Tom Orr,
Picking up my
the mountain man.
and Tom Moore, he was right after too. So, and I said, "That's it, you two. Randy, get your chaps back on and get out here."
And Randy got off onto the back of your horse.
Yes,
Oh, wow. Wow. Very impressive. And what did you think of that? I mean, first time you'd ever done it, you hadn't practiced. You'd watched it, but you hadn't practiced.
Right. Well, it happens so fast, and you have to be, and you have to be mounted, and of course his big buckskin horse was terrific at that, and he knew how to get in there, and Randy knew how to get off, and I said, "I would not want this as a job. I'll stick with my contract tax."
Boy, you have to get right in the middle of things. My goodness. And tell me about Dollar.
Oh, he was wonderful. And of course, every time we see a movie on television, I said, Randy said, "There's Dollar, there's Dollar." But in Steve had hired Dollar for that rodeo season. And when we were finished, when he was finished with him, he says, "Well, why don't you take him home and take care of him this summer?" And it was great. We were able to do that. He was quite the horse. So every time we watch a John Wayne movie, which is one of my favorites, I'll watch him 10 times over. There's Dollar.
And you had Dollar at the house for a while.
Yep. The whole summer after the last building rodeo, we took him home for the summer.
Okay. Did you ever get on him? Did you ever ride him?
No, I didn't. Randy did, but
Okay.
I said, "You know what? That's all right."
Wow, how cool. That's what a career. What an adventure you've had, Marilee.
Yeah, life's an adventure.
Yeah, for
It's what you
sure.
make it.
Boy, I was saying you've done a lot. I mean, Randy told me about the getting attacked by the yak.
Oh,
Yeah.
that I'd like to
Yeah,
forget.
no doubt.
After Wade, he's always dealing in going to sales and exotics and things like that. And he and Molly, they came to the house, and I didn't know that he had a yak in the alleyway there. And of course, my job was to get up in the morning and go feed. And I had a special Randy, one of his pickup horses who was like 32 years old. He had a special little formula that I would fix up for him, and he was in the barn. So I went in down the alleyway, didn't even know see the bull at the end. And that was the last thing I remember. I don't even remember a thing about it, which was good.
Goodness, my
I don't
goodness.
remember a single thing.
No, knocked out, my goodness. And no lingering effects from that attack.
Well, yet, you know how you do have things, you get broke my cavic of bone there, and sometimes my shoulder hurts, and
Okay.
between my legs, he stuck his horns and used me like a basketball. I had
Yeah.
edema on that, and it took a long time to go away.
Oh, wow.
But it's a good thing I didn't remember it. I
And
mean, I don't even.
you were still entertaining at that point? You were still doing your
No.
acts? No.
No, not. No, not. Not. I had retarded at that point.
So what year
I can
did you re-
remember.
go ahead.
I remember laying there on the. There was an alleyway, and it was in cement. And I looked up and saw him in the corner, and I thought, "Oh my God, if he comes again!" When we had Powder River Gates in a pan there, and I thought, "If I could just crawl under this Powder River Gate," but I couldn't move very much. So that's when Wade and Randy came out. So thank God.
Wow. So when did you retire from entertaining?
Probably, let's see, after maybe 25 years, so that would
Oh, wow.
put it, yeah.
Okay. And you just quit cold turkey, you slowed down.
Yeah.
How did it go?
Well, I just, at the end of the season, I had retired my big black horse, and that was enough. I said, it was coming into winter, so there's plenty of things to keep you busy. And at that time, I still had. Was raising border collies, so I always had a lot of dogs to take care of, and Wade was traveling, and just Randy to take care of. And, you just kind of enjoy it.
And you said, I'm not booking anymore. You just said that's
Right.
done.
That's it.
Okay. And then did you still got the border collies, you're still raising border collies. Were you
Right.
still involved in competition? Did you still compete?
If you had a young dog that showed a lot of promise, then I would, compete in
Okay.
them. But usually, when you had a young dog that had a lot of promise, somebody would come along and buy him, and then you'd have to start all over again.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. What an interesting life, Marilee. What a very cool, interesting, action-packed life.
Life is never dull.
Life is never dull. So, let me ask a couple questions here. Just kind of first thing that comes to your mind. Who in the rodeo world would you most like to have dinner with, dead or alive, and what would you ask them?
Oh, let's see. I would probably like to have maybe Larry Mahan. I would like to have dinner with Larry Mahan.
And what would you ask him?
How are you doing? How's your wife? Well, he retired. He'd been to the house several times, and he's very gracious, very soft-spoken, very well, smart man, businessman, but a very gracious person to talk to.
Great gentleman. That is so neat. So blessed that you got to meet him and got to get to know
Oh,
him.
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Another question. What's the best rodeo advice you've ever received, and who gave it to you?
That's kind of hard to figure out. Best rodeo advice.
Or best entertaining advice, or best life advice, whatever
well,
it might be.
Lenore Rowe was always a good person to talk to. She always would encourage you to be showman, be a showman. You know, you always try to follow in her footsteps. She was a great entertainer.
Yeah, great lady, yeah. Another question. What's the most unusual or memorable fan interaction you've had at a rodeo?
Well, I was walking down in Madison Square Gardens, walking in front of the building, and this woman came up and she said, "Oh, I'm so excited." She said, "The rodeo was wonderful." She says, "I don't know how many buses all the way from Queens, wherever that was in New York." She says, "It was just wonderful." And I always remember this little gray-haired lady, how excited she was. Oh, and I thought, well, that was nice.
That is nice. What a great, yeah, that's so cool. You can have a conversation like that.
Yeah.
So here's kind of an odd one, but I kind of like it. Have you ever had a rodeo dream or nightmare? And what was it about?
Nightmare. I had a nightmare happen on the road going to Angola in Indiana. One year we were driven through the night and stopped at a stop at one of the roadway. We could get gas and donuts and things like that. And I remember this couple in front of us, Asian couple, and their two teenage boys. And we got in our truck and they left and we're driving down the road. And I said, "Randy, I'm really tired. Your turn to take over." So we pulled off and got out. And I was going to go in the back and feed the monkeys a couple of grapes so that they wouldn't get dehydrated. And crash, there was this couple had come down the toll road and went off the road, and went back on the road and hit the back of our trailer.
Oh, my gosh. And,
oh, yeah. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was a fatality in their car, and it just damaged the back of the trailer, but it broke the hitch on the truck and the trailer.
Really?
So we had to call somebody, and they came. And I remember Rodney Mandrell was driving by. He was rodeoing, and he pulled over, and he took all my props and everything that onto the rodeo, and we were going to meet him there. And then I went in the trailer and took all my costumes and loaded the dogs and the monkeys in the back of the truck, because the truck was still drivable. It was just that the trailer was damaged. And that was a nightmare.
And were you in the trailer when it got hit?
I had just gotten out of the trailer.
Just stepped out.
The monkeys
and
her, okay. Stepped out and crash. Oh, it was terrifying.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. That's frightening, man. What a story, Marilee. My goodness. And nobody hurt on your crew? No animals?
No.
Nobody.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, well, my one trick horse, my big black horse, he had a cut on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. But at that point he wasn't lame on it. Mm-hmm. I had to treat him for couple of weeks afterwards, you know, where he had a hole in his shoulder, you know, top and bottom, and it would just flush it out.
Wow.
But he was the worst one, but destroyed the trailer. You know, it wasn't drivable. It was totaled the trailer. It was like, oh my God,
oh,
you know, we called a friend from Wisconsin and he came with a truck and trailer and took all of our animals home.
Yeah.
And we of course could still drive our truck.
Yeah.
But that was scary.
That's beyond scary. My goodness. What a, wow, that is a nightmare. So we've covered a lot of ground today. What haven't we talked about? Anything come to mind?
Well, I've got two little granddaughters,
wonderful,
a redhead and a blonde, that are barrel racers.
How old?
They're 11 and 12.
11 and 12. And are they out competing?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Very competitive. It's very competitive down here in Texas.
Okay.
There's barrel racing everywhere. And it's not just the locals. I mean, all the top names, Cassie Mowry, Brittany Posey, all of them, they compete down here. And girls are doing good. They've got good horses. And Molly and Wade make sure they go to wherever they need to. And they enjoy it.
So are they doing organized rodeo, like National Little Britches Rodeo or anything
like
that?
No, they do. There are so many barrel races put on by certain organizations and put up money. Although Kimber, the Dublin Rodeo was last week, and she competed in that, and she was fifth on Friday.
Oh, wow.
And there's so many rodeos in this area, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So many barrel racing, so many big places. They have an arena just outside of Stephenville on 377 that T. Woolman put up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And, the team rope, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean to tell you, it's 700 foot long, all covered. Unbelievable. They get so many barrel racers, hundreds of them, you know.
Wow. And that's a lot of work to be a barrel racer. I mean, working up the horses through the week and the hauling and just everything involved.
Yeah, yep.
And they're enjoying it.
They enjoy it.
Okay.
The little redhead Kaylee, she's got a little herd of mini ponies that she keeps out back behind the house here in a small pasture. She comes over every day and messes with her ponies.
Okay. She's got ponies. How neat. So growing up in the horse world, that's perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what advice would you give maybe to your granddaughters? Maybe they get a little bit older and they want to break out, or they want to go travel, whatever the case may be, acts or whatever. What advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, if they're really serious about their event, they need to go with or get in contact with somebody that's really good and will give them the pointers that they need. That's why when anybody, like if you're going to want to be a saddle bronc rider, you go to a saddle bronc riding school, some knowledgeable person that's putting it on. The same with bareback, the same with barrel racing, anything, calf roping, anything that you want to be good at, you go to the best that you are capable of attending and learn from them.
Okay. And are there opportunities like that if you want to be an entertainer, whether that's a trick rider or a trick roper, to have a dog act, whatever it might be? Are there resources out there, Mary Lee, that they could that they can find?
Well, they'd have to really look at it. I mean, barrel racing, there's lots of barrel racers that mentor young girls, and the same with everything. But as far as getting into the acts, like if you want a trick ride, you go to somebody that's teaching trick riding or Roman riding, and then learn from there. And of course, most of it falls is to how much you put effort into it, how much showmanship, how much you have to look at yourself. Am I dressed correctly? Do I know how to just present it to the crowd instead of a duh? You know, you go a ta-da, you know, you just, you have to sell it. If you're in the contract act business, you're selling yourself to the crowd.
Yeah, and that showmanship, and you were talking about Lenora Rowe and all of that of how important that is. And where do you find that? How do you develop that? Is that acting in school? Is that theater?
Well, I don't imagine that would hurt, but you have to be an outgoing kind of a person. It's, you know, life's a stage, you know, how do you want to present yourself? It's, and also too, if you're going to be good at it, maybe a lot of people want to do it, but they're no good at it. You know, you have to realize your limitations and just go from there. If you want it bad enough, you'll do it.
Yeah.
Put the work in. You have to put the work in.
Yeah. I love it. Absolutely love it. Life is a stage. I love that.
Right.
I love that. Perfect. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Marilee. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, yes, Doug. Well, thank you, Doug. And if you ever need anything more, give me a call.
I will do that. Thank you. And to our listeners, we hope that you enjoyed this episode of our podcast with Marilee Steffen. If you do, please share it with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. To make your listening easier, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Search for Beyond the Chutes, that's C-H-U-T-E-S, and follow us, like us, rate us, give us comments, let us hear from you. If you like reels, we got reels. Check out our Beyond the Chutes Facebook page and click follow. And we'd like to say thank you to Parasite Systems for their support with our podcast. Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic systems for your pasture animals, your horses, cattle, goat, sheep, chicken, maybe for your yaks, and for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats, your border collies, and so forth. And keep your horses and your dogs in top condition. Remember, the miles you are driving, they are riding behind you in that trailer, and you can find them at parasitesystems.com. That's para, S-I-G-H-T, systems.com. And we got a coupon code for BTC023 for 50% off your mail-in kits. All you do is collect a specimen, you send it in a few days, they send it back an email and tell you exactly what's going on, what parasites you might be facing with your herd or your flock or your dogs. And I listen to a lot of podcasts about a lot of subjects, rodeo, racing, you name it, I'm in it. I want to encourage you to listen to a great rodeo podcast. It's called Rodeo Roots Podcast. Rob and Danigan and Blue Jeans, the announcer, they're recording some great interviews, capturing a lot of great history, and you can find them also on the major streaming platforms. That's Rodeo Roots Podcast. And a big thank you to the IRA Project Facebook group for all their help and guidance. Tim Sparks and Marlon Harris, we thank you. You've been such a great help in getting us connected with the rodeo greats of the International Professional Rodeo Association. This is Beyond the Chutes with
Marilee Steffen.
Until next time, this is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.